Well, what do you want to do when you grow up? Now, I don't know when the last time someone asked you that question. Maybe it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. But how many of us have actually become train drivers, professional football players, or even astronauts? You know, from an early age, we think about our career. We're encouraged to study hard so that we can get a good job. Yet today, we are faced with this wise teacher telling us that work is meaninglessness. How do you match up one of the first commands in the Bible to Adam and Eve to work with this apparent contradiction? Now, the phrase under the sun is something we read over and over again in the book of Ecclesiastes. It actually appeared 5 times in the reading that Anna just read. When the teacher writes under the sun, he has in mind living life apart from God, living life in a fallen world. It's how you're supposed to find life in the world that has been cursed by God. See, what we've begun to see in this series over these last couple of weeks is that apart from God, the search for meaning under the sun is endlessly frustrating. The pursuit of more and more is like chasing after the wind. We think we've got it, but then it's gone. It's futile. It's frustrating. Knowledge, money, possessions, pleasure, popularity, power and palaces, all of these things betray us with their broken promises. They can't ultimately give our lives purpose or meaning. This is life under the sun. Well, what about work? It's a huge part of our lives, isn't it? Can what we do for a living bring us meaning? Now, I was perusing the Harvard Business Review blog the other day, as you do, and I came across this article about finding meaning at work. And it pointed out that you will spend, on average, some 80,000 hours at work. Almost certainly, you will spend more time at work than you will with your children. And the gist of the article is that you need to find some meaning in your job. And it suggested that some find meaning in having a purpose, like a job that enables the poor people in this world to have better lives. Others find meaning in self-realization of new skills, or an accomplishment of tasks, like Gyro, Japan's greatest sushi chef, whose quest for perfect sushi, according to him, gives my life a deep intrinsic satisfaction. Still others find meaning at work in status and power or in community, and I don't think that's surprising when you think about the number of people who now eat alone. But it's sad to walk through life and experience work as empty, dreadful, a chore, sapping energy out of your body and soul. Yet many employees do, as evidenced by one large-scale survey that I came across where only 31% of employees were actually engaged. In these verses, we see the teacher reflecting back on his own lifetime of work. And we know from last week, in verse 4 through 6 of chapter 2, that the teacher had a very active work life. He undertook many great projects. He built houses, gardens, and parks, and enjoyed planting fruit trees. He even constructed irrigation pools to provide water for their cultivation and growth. He certainly seemed engaged in his work, but did it provide him with meaning? Well, in our remaining time, I'd like us to first notice the teacher's under-the-sun mentality towards work. Finding no ultimate purpose or meaning in pleasure, we see that in first section of chapter 2, nor in wisdom, we see that in the second section, our teacher now explores the possibility that work can satisfy. But you'll see right from the very start, from verse 17, he leaves the reader in no doubt as to his conclusion. He starts off by saying that he didn't just hate work, he says, I hated life because of work. The teacher isn't exaggerating. Work is often frustrating, isn't it? It's full of thorns and thistles. You no doubt will have known times when work is so miserable that it's made your life miserable. But this shouldn't surprise us. In many ways, Ecclesiastes is a commentary on Genesis 3. It's really where life under the sun begins. It's where sin enters the world. How will you provide for your family? Through sweat and toil. How will you bear children? With pain and tears. Sin impacts everything. God made work for our flourishing, but now the whole creation under the sun has become subject to frustration. You see, under the sun mentality towards work, and indeed to everything else, can be summed up in one word: frustrating. Things just don't seem to be as they should be. And things often just don't work out as you would hope. Now, though never explicitly mentioned in this reading, the nemesis of death, as we saw last week, continues to haunt our author. As it did with pleasure and wisdom, death also casts its shadow over toil. Death doesn't seem right. He finds death frustrating. It causes him to worry about tomorrow, as we see in verses 18 to 21. The teacher begins in verse 18 by expressing his worry about what is going to happen to his wealth after his death. He has no control over it. It will go to someone, but the question is to whom? And the recognition of his powerlessness in this regard frustrates him. He who inherits his wealth might be a wise man or indeed a fool, according to verse 19. And he expresses his skepticism with the expression, "Who knows?" So he uses this rhetorical device to reveal that no one, especially himself, knows the answer to this question. And this frustrates him greatly. It leads to feelings of despair, verse 20. And then he illustrates the point with an anecdote in verse 21. The teacher describes a person who works industriously and with skill, achieving success. And you'll almost certainly know somebody like this. Indeed, this may be you. And this is the type of person that people envy. Sadly, this person dies and has to leave his fortune to someone. It goes to someone who did not work for it. And the implication is that this person does not deserve the wealth. And the teacher is distressed by the prospect of who is going to inherit his own wealth. And one assumes here that he thinks that that person will be undeserving. And unsurprisingly, over the centuries, there have been parallels drawn here between Solomon and Rehoboam. The teacher's worry that all his hard work in this life will be wasted by his son or some young upstart. And that feeling suggests that he also feels something of the unfairness of life. And we see these feelings of unfairness or frustration voiced even louder when the teacher turns his thoughts to a regular day in a worker's life. He's worried about tomorrow, but he's also anxious about today, verse 22 and 23. In verse 22, the teacher poses the question, what do people get in return for their work in this fallen world? And he tells us that by the end of each day, they are physically and mentally exhausted. And by night, they cannot sleep because of anxiety. Now, I worked as a lawyer for 10 years, and I lost count at the end of my first year, the number of sleepless nights that I had. And I knew when I was particularly troubled by an issue, because the same thought that kept me awake was also the first thought that came to mind when I woke in the morning. And each one of you will know something of that anxiety. You see, my anxiety usually came down to one of two things: frustration arising from my lack of control over the outcome of an event, or anxiety generated by the sheer unfairness of life. In my case, I had to learn that even in legal matters, justice is often not done, at least not on this side of eternity. We need to understand that worries about tomorrow and anxiety about today are part and parcel of a world living under God's curse. To live under the sun is to live in frustration. We can't undo the futility of life under the sun because we can't undo the curse of sin. But God can. So let's notice, secondly, under God mentality towards work. To find meaning under the sun, we need to look above and beyond the sun. That's what Ecclesiastes ultimately wants us to do. God wants us to see that only He can take the meaningless things of life under the sun and make them meaningful. To see that He can turn futility into fruit. To see that He can pull out the weeds from our human work. In verse 24, we find the author recognizing ultimately that all good things come from God. In this verse, we have here a summary of the teacher's thinking, not only with respect to the section we're thinking about this lunchtime, but indeed with regards to the whole of the book of Ecclesiastes. And it reads, "A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God." He gives this practical advice in the light of this conclusion, that meaning may not be found in either pleasure, wisdom, or hard work. The teacher encourages the reader to eat and drink. He also surprisingly advocates, you'll notice, work. And it seems a little odd given that he just concluded a few moments ago that work is meaningless. He's actually not being inconsistent. What he's arguing for is that work should bring limited enjoyment, not ultimate satisfaction. In a fallen world, we are all looking for meaning. We can look for it in pleasure, in relationships, or in work. And the message of Ecclesiastes is that in all these things, we will ultimately only find frustration if they become our sole source of meaning. It's a warning against you and me ultimately finding our identity in things apart from God. It's a warning against any of us looking to work to define us. Let me say that I think that men particularly struggle with this. Now, we seemed hardwired to find meaning in work. Many of us, sadly, are relationally challenged. And our principal place of success often becomes the workplace. Sometimes we look to work to define who we are. I am a lawyer, or I'm a plumber, or I'm a programmer, or I'm a senior executive, or I'm a pastor. We want to feel appreciated and respected in our work. We want to feel good about our work, to feel good about ourselves. And this is often how we find meaning. But let me say to you, it's a dangerous place to be, particularly when retirement comes. You may or may not recall a children's show from the 70s, 80s called Mr. Ben. Now, Mr. Ben was clearly a businessman, as seen by his suit and his bowler hat. And yet the show revolved around him visiting a shop every day and putting on a different outfit, ranging from a space suit to cowboy outfits. And depending on what outfit Mr. Ben changed into, the changing room would then change into a world that matched his outfit. And he would then have an adventure. And then at the end of the show, he would change back into his suit and he would go back into his normal life. He'd go back to work. And clearly, we see his job is not enough. He needs something else, which is the way it's meant to be. You see, the teacher leaves us absolutely clear that as Christians, our mentality towards work should be more balanced. Any success we have enjoyed in the end is not down to us anyway, is it? It's the hand of God who gives blessing after all, verse 24. Success at work is beyond human achievement. It's in God's control, and He will hand it out to whomever He wants. God's sovereignty doesn't seem to cheer up our teacher, as we see from verse 25 and 26, he still concludes with his typically ambiguous statement. But as Christians, living on this side of the cross, we can be comforted by God's sovereignty. Jesus Christ is the one who redeems us from the meaninglessness under which the teacher suffered. Jesus redeemed us from the teacher's meaningless world by subjecting himself to it. Hanging on the cross, Jesus experienced the frustration of this world under curse. Christians can experience deep pleasure in those areas where the teacher ultimately only found dissatisfaction, because Christ is restoring meaning to work. We now work as redeemed people. We work to the glory of God. Our goal is not to honor ourselves, but to honor God. We know that the world and indeed the workplace is broken by sin, but as God is changing us for good, so we can make a difference in our workplace. Ecclesiastes critiques our work in a fallen world. It warns us that we will not find ultimate fulfillment in it, but it also points to the gospel. And in the gospel, we learn that our work is a gift from God, a creation mandate, and through it, we can find genuine satisfaction and bring glory to our Creator. Amen.